He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning.
And I don't have any inside information.
The lady that did it, she got in there. I mean, she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Friday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green with you. Glad you are with us to close out the week here on Hacker After Dark. We got NBA playoff action going on. It is kind of weird. I was telling Denmark, Tuesday night when the Magic just got their heart ripped out in Cleveland, that to me kind of felt like the end of the year. And then I went on that rant on Wednesday about why have I supported this team for 35 years. Well, they are still playing tonight, right? Game 6 is going on down in Orlando, 4:45 to go in the second quarter. Orlando up 40-36. A Orlando win would force a Game 7 back in Cleveland on Sunday. You know what the NBA thinks of this series? Game 6 will end roughly about 9:30 tonight, 10 o'clock tonight. If Orlando wins, Game 7 is in 40 hours. They don't even give them 2 full days off. I mean, that is interesting scheduling, to say the least, but we'll see what happens. Orlando trying to keep their season alive. Later on tonight, same story for the LA Clippers. They have to win in Dallas tonight for their season to stay alive as the Mavericks look to close them out. That's a 9:30 tip out there in Dallas. I don't think we've ever, ever, ever mentioned a WNBA preseason game, but Caitlin Clark makes her WNBA debut tonight. So we'll keep you updated on that, see how she's doing. Again, a preseason variety, but certainly one of the most popular players to ever enter the WNBA. So we'll keep you updated on that as well. But for the next 2 hours till 10 o'clock, it is primarily all NFL. It is primarily all Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming up in hour number one at about 8:35, 8:40 or so, John Shipley of Jaguar Report will join us to recap the Jaguar draft and also look at the release earlier this week of wide receiver Zay Jones. So John Shipley of Jaguar Report about 40 minutes away. Coming up inside of 20 minutes, former Jaguar tight end, my buddy Clay Harbor. Played almost a decade in the National Football League, a handful of years right here in Jacksonville. Always enjoy talking ball with Clay Harbor. I have not had him on since the season ended. So we'll kind of do a review, his thoughts not only on the draft, but also on free agency and the offseason that has been so far for the Jacksonville Jaguars. The former Jaguar Clay Harbor comes up in about 15 minutes. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we give you a big deal of the night and Dylan Denmark. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
So earlier today, DeJuan Smoot signs with the Buffalo Bills. DeJuan Smoot, who is in the top 10 all time in sacks in Jaguar history. Yeah, I believe he ranked number 9 all time, 23.5 sacks in a Jaguar uniform. You know, I mentioned this last night, and obviously we spend a majority of our time here on 1010XL talking about the new additions, right? The new arrivals, the new free agents, the new draft picks. But if you really think back over the last 2 months, boy, a lot of guys that have played a lot of football in Jaguar uniforms are now gone. I mean, just think about it. Rayshon Jenkins, Darius Williams, Foley Fatakasi, gone. Today, DeJuan Smoot, gone. Kalavon Chaisson, a former first-round pick, gone. Zay Jones was released earlier this week. Jamal Agnew, Trey Herndon will not return. A lot of turnover, man, from a lot of guys that have been here I mean, DeJuan Smoot was here, what, 7 years? Caleb on Chason was here 4 years. Agnew was here 3. A lot of turnover. Now, sometimes turnover can be good. Sometimes turnover can be bad. I think in this instance, moving forward for the 2024 Jacksonville Jaguars, I think turnover was a good thing. To me, you could not rest on your laurels 2 years in a row. I'm not breaking any news there. They decided to basically run it back from 22 to 23. They had 9 wins in 22 in the regular season. They had 9 wins in 23 in the regular season. So you knew there was going to be some change on the roster. Did I expect this much change? I don't know. I don't know. I think when all is said and done, potentially 20 new players in 24 than who was here in 23. I mean, 20. That's a lot. You're talking about darn near 40% of the roster is going to be different than what ended the year on January 7th in that loss to the Tennessee Titans. But again, I'm happy about the new additions, man. I'm fired up about Eric Armstead. I'm happy about Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas, Mason Smith, Jerrion Jones, Jordan Jefferson. You know, go on down the line. Mitch Morse, Ronald Darby. A lot of guys that I'm fired up are here. But I just wanted to take a moment to talk about guys that obviously are gone. And again, DeJuan Smoot was a big contribution to the Jaguars. He was a contributor, man. That guy played 7 years here with Jacksonville. Say what you will about Caleb on Chason, but he was one of the longest tenured guys as well. He was here 4 years. And then you get down to the Jamal Agnews, the Rayshon Jenkins of the world, Darius Williams, Zay Jones. A lot of guys departing here in Jacksonville. My question is, and I asked this on Twitter earlier today, what Jaguar that was here in 2023 that will not be here in 2024 are the Jaguars going to miss the most on the field? Denmark, I want to get your thoughts on that in a moment. Now, if it's somebody else, you tell me. I put 4 potential guys. My 4 guys were Rayshon Jenkins, Darius Williams, DeJuan Smoot, and Zay Jones, obviously outside of Calvin Ridley. And that was the caveat, other than Ridley. So, Denmark, am I missing anybody other than Ridley? Are those the 4 guys, Rayshon Jenkins, Zay Jones, DeJuan Smoot, Darius Williams?
Yeah, I wouldn't put fully Fadakasi in this group.
I wouldn't put Fadakasi. I wouldn't put certainly Caleb on Chason or Trey Herndon.
Or McManus.
Brandon McManus. Yeah, he's another one. I wouldn't put any of those guys. But I think outside of Ridley, those are probably the 4 you're talking about. Jenkins, Williams, Jones, Smoot. Let me ask you before I give the results. Of those 4, who are the Jaguars going to miss the most in 2024?
What the poll? What according to the poll, like what the fans?
What do you think?
What do I think? They're going to miss the most. I'll probably think either Jenkins or Williams. I'll go Williams since he just had the best year.
It's actually a runaway. So we had 240 votes. If you want to vote, feel free at Ryan Green 1010XL. Say, well, who's Ryan Green? Oh, that's a name on birth certificate. Should be Hacker at this point, but it's not. At Ryan Green, 1010XL, a.k.a. Hacker. Of the 4 guys, DeJuan Smoot received 12% of the vote. Rayshon Jenkins and Zay Jones are tied with 15.3% of the vote. And with an overwhelming 57% of the vote, Darius Williams. Darius Williams. Now, look. Darius Williams had a couple of splash plays, right? The pick 6 against Atlanta in London really stands out. But are they going to miss Darius Williams more than any other guy outside of Calvin Ridley? According to your vote, they are. I don't know if Ronald Darby's an upgrade, but I don't think it's much of a downgrade. I think it's probably a push.
That's a recency bias, though, Vo, don't you think? Just because of the year he had.
Yeah, probably. But again, that's what I'm saying. Darius Williams made a couple of splash plays. I remember, and again, not to badmouth guys while they're gone, I really liked Rayshon Jenkins. Rayshon Jenkins was a locker room favorite of mine. That guy was great to talk, great soundbite. Darius Williams, I think I asked him for an interview a couple of times, and he just didn't like talking to the media, Denmark, which is fine. No
issues.
Give
you Pat Bev?
No, he didn't go Pat Beverly. He didn't go that. He wasn't that rude like Pat Beverly was. That was ridiculous. Darius Williams was not rude about it. He just wasn't a big fan of talking. So this is not to say anything ill towards those guys, but I thought both of them were pretty bad towards the end of the year. You know, you think of things that were bad in that 5 out of 6 collapse. The pass defense might be tops on that list. Jake Browning tore you a new one. Joe Flacco tore you a new one. Baker Mayfield tore you a new one. And then Derrick Henry ran all over you. It was not good at the end of the year. I'll give him a pass for Lamar Jackson. But Joe Flacco, Baker Mayfield, and Jake Browning, yikes. They needed to overhaul that secondary, and they have with Ronald Darby, with Darnell Savage, with Jerrion Jones, with DeAndre Prince, the fifth rounder, among others. But yeah, a lot of guys, when they come back, they're already back, but when OTAs begin in a couple of weeks with mini camp next month and training camp in July, you're going to make sure you need a roster. You're going to make sure you have a depth chart when you go out there to the Miller Electric Center. Because, again, I think anywhere from absolutely 15 to upwards of 20, 21, maybe 22 guys are going to be new on this roster in 2024 that were not here a season ago. A guy that was on this roster at one time is my buddy Clay Harbor, former tight end for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Clay played almost a decade in the National Football League. Good player, long career. He now does a lot of work media-wise up in Chicago, but he loves his Jaguars. He follows Jacksonville like nobody's business, and that's why we love having him on. We're not only going to review the draft, we're going to review kind of the offseason. I haven't talked to Clay since the season ended. Former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor next on a Friday night edition, a week-ending edition of Hacker After Dark here in the city of Jacksonville. It's 1010XL, and it's 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar offseason, well, a lot of it is in the rearview mirror, right? Free agency, for the most part, has come and gone. The NFL draft has come and gone. We got rookie minicamp next week, and OTAs are now inside of 3 weeks down the road. With that, let's kind of recap the Jaguar offseason with my buddy Clay Harbor. He played tight end for almost a decade in the National Football League, including some of that time right here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Clay, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ryan. Appreciate you having me on, man. Love talking Jaguars. Love my time out there. And I think we're heading in the right direction here.
Clay, always appreciate the time. You and I spoke when the season ended. And look, at that point, it was rough times, right? The Jaguars had lost 5 out of 6 from 8-3 to missing the postseason. But a lot transpired between free agency and the draft. And we'll kind of get your thoughts individually on guys in a moment. But a broad overview, Clay, what's been your thought on the last, you know, 3.5 months of what the Jaguars have accomplished?
I like what they've done, and they've filled some needs, and they've really gotten some players, obviously, in free agency, in the draft, I think, that can help them. You know, the number one thing pickup I liked was Eric Armstead, right? I know he's a guy that hasn't been able to stay healthy as of late, but he is a weapon, man. He's a guy, you watch him on tape, you watch him on film. Me as a tight end, obviously he can play interior, he does some outside, but he's a guy I don't want to go against, right? He's a big, stout guy. I mean, 33 sacks over the last few years. The guy can just get the job done. And putting him on a D-line with Josh Allen, obviously re-signing Josh Allen, got to say, great move. I know it's a lot of money, but you need to do it. Trayvon Walker coming into his own, I think that was a great pickup. And I also like the Ronald Darby pickup there, right? He's a veteran guy. He's played with several teams. He's not a guy that's going to any shock and awe, but he's a guy that you know what you're getting with him, and he's done it before. He's a veteran, and you're going to be able to get by with him. And then Gabe Davis, obviously. Maybe some people think maybe you overpaid. You wanted to bring back Ridley. I like Gabe Davis. I think he's a guy that can catch the football. He's performed in this league. He has 27 career touchdowns. Last year, 45 catches, 750 yards, 7 touchdowns with the Bills. He's a guy that's going to help, right? And a guy that I know pretty well, too, and you're not going to hear much about him, but Trevis Gibson, I think he's a guy that can help on the D-line depth. And Mitch Morse, I think you needed a center, right? You needed a center. And, I don't want to talk bad about our guy, but I think that's a big improvement and a guy that's done it in this league. And I think that's going to help Trevor, having a veteran guy back there, not have to worry about the protections as much. So now he can keep his eyes downfield. He can focus on what coverage he's getting. He can focus on more things, knowing that you're not going to get that pressure right up the gut. Because this is a veteran football player that's played. You have more confidence in him. So I love that move as well.
Former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. And Clay, let's talk about the lines of scrimmage first, because Trent Baalke, back in January when he met the media, you know, at that point, everybody was asking about the future of Calvin Ridley and the Josh Allen extension. And those were the big stories. But if you go back and you watch that thing, one of the things Baalke said, we got to get bigger, man. We got to get more physical. We got to get tougher on the line of scrimmage, on both the O-line and the D-line. We were getting pushed around. Well, look at this offseason. You mentioned Mitch Morse. They re-sign Ezra Cleveland. They draft Javon Foster out of Missouri. And that was just on the offensive line. Defensively, Eric Armstead, Trevis Gibson. They draft Mason Smith. They draft Jordan Jefferson. They draft Miles Cole. That's 8 guys, 280-plus, that they've added to both lines of scrimmage. Clay, Baalke did exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, he really did. And I even liked that the safety they brought in with Savage. I know we're talking about the players up front, but this guy can play down in the run game as well as defend passes on the back end there. But, yeah, I thought he did a great job. Like I said, the Armstead move is one of my most underrated moves of all free agency. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be a difference maker. Right now, I put up this defensive line with the old Saxonville days. I think he got big. You watch these guys coming off the bus, you're like, oh my goodness, who are we playing against this game? And as a guy, you know, you're watching the team and you're saying, hey, you're watching the tape. Who am I going against? What is this going to be, a physical team? Is this going to be a finesse team? This is going to be a physical, big defensive front. You're going into a game, you know, your chin strap's got to be buckled. And I think that's what Baalke wants. Obviously, he's a traits guy, but I love the moves he made, especially in the trenches. I think it was a good job for him.
Let's talk about two guys that you mentioned briefly. Number one, Trevis Gibson. You're very familiar in the Chicago area with the Bears. Obviously, you do a lot of work up there. You're a former Bear as well. I mean, Trevis Gibson's a guy, 10 sacks in 21 and 22. He went to Nashville last year with the Titans, didn't do very much. But, Clay, looking at his numbers, he had 7 sacks in 21, and I want to say Bill Shuey, who's now here in Jacksonville, was his position coach in Chicago in 21. I don't know if that means anything, but it's certainly interesting.
No, I love Trevis Gibson. Like you said, I cover the Bears. I'm out there at training camp. I've seen this guy play. He's big. He's athletic. He was a fifth-round pick. He's young. I think he's only 25, 26 years old. He had 7 sacks that year. What happened with him was the Bears were counting on him to really be a big-time pass rusher, with no other pass rushers on the defensive line with him, right? So now he's getting double teamed, he's getting chips, and he's not a guy that's going to be playing through that stuff. He just couldn't do it. But when you put him on a line, the other side, you got Josh Allen, you got Eric Armstead, you got Trayvon Walker. He's a guy that you could put inside in pass rush situations, you can put outside. So for me, in this scenario, with this team, he's going to get one-on-ones. That's why he was able to have 7 sacks and not that many reps back in 2021. So I love the addition. I think this is a guy that you can see under the radar, can play, and in the right situation, when he's not getting double teamed, he's a problem.
A couple more for former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. You also mentioned, Clay, Darnell Savage with your coverage of the NFC North up there. Interestingly, that he was primarily a safety in Green Bay. There was some talk about maybe moving him to nickel here in Jacksonville, although I don't know about that now. because they drafted Jarian Jones out of Florida State in round three. Regardless, Savage is going to be somewhere in the Jaguars secondary, and based on what you said, you seem to like that addition.
No, I love Savage. He's a guy that can play in all aspects of the game, and he's a guy that's going to get down there in the box and stop the run. And that's a big thing for the Jaguars this year, is you want to stop the run. And once they do that, you know, you're going to get tested a little bit more on the outside. I know there's still concerns about the cornerbacks and the defensive backfield. Well, like I said, they've got some veteran guys back there. And I like this team. You got some young guys, but you also got some veteran guys. And for me, when I'm looking at a team, one of the best places I think you can have veteran guys like Savage is in the defensive backfield, because the communication is so key back there. And that's something that they're going to have. You know, Ronald Darby's a guy who's communicated before. Savage is a guy who's communicated before. They're going to be on the same page. They know what it takes to be successful. They know what it takes to play. And I think that's going to help the Jaguars a lot come the season.
Coy, let's go to your side of the ball, the offensive side of the ball. You know, I have a picture in my phone that I took in August last year of Calvin Ridley, Zay Jones, and Christian Kirk. And I remember thinking at the time, it was during training camp, wow, this could be something for the next couple of years. Here we are, eight and a half months later, Ridley's gone, Zay Jones is gone, Kirk is all that remains, but you add Gabe Davis, you had a first-round pick in Brian Thomas, you combine those guys with Evan Ingram, you sign Devin Duvernay from Baltimore, obviously Travis Etienne still. What do you make of the skill position surrounding Trevor Lawrence?
I like it. I think they can add maybe a little bit of depth, but we'll start with Duvernay. Obviously, this guy was a third-round pick back in 2020. He's a big-time returner, and that's where he really makes his money. But the guy has caught 100 passes, probably 1,000 yards, and a few touchdowns. So he's a guy that can do a lot of different things, but it's going to help you a lot with these new return rules, punt return, kick return game. And then Brian Thomas, I think you got great value there. You're able to trade back, and you're still able to get one of the better receivers in the draft. And this guy led the FBS in receiving touchdowns last year, and he was on a team with Malik Nabers, okay? This guy can get the job done. I mean, very impressive. 17 touchdowns in 13 games, over 1,000 yards, 6'2", 6'3". He can run. He can catch. I love this pick. You're able to even get some more picks from him. So to me, excellent job. I think that's going to loosen up some coverage there. So Travis Etienne can run the ball more, and he pairs well with Gabe Davis, and he pairs well with Christian Kirk, guys that can go inside and outside. I wouldn't mind seeing him maybe add another outside receiver before free agency ends, and you'll see another run on guys before the season starts, post-draft. You start bringing guys in for camps and whatnot. So I like where they're at, especially when you add Evan Ingram into that, because he's a guy that obviously we know how versatile he is, one of the best years for a tight end, the best year for a tight end in Jaguars history last year. I think he's one of the top versatile tight ends in the league. So to me, I like the weapons. It's not spectacular, but it's enough to get the job done. He's got guys like Kirk that he can trust.
Final moments of former Jacksonville Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. Clay, Trevor Lawrence, coming into year number four. We all expect a contract extension for Trevor sooner rather than later. A lot of questions about him, though, nationally, it seems. Maybe some of the luster is off from what people thought about him 12 months ago. You being a former player, you covering the league nationally, you being a former Jaguar at that. What is your opinion of Trevor entering 2024?
I'm still high on Trevor, and I know you look at the numbers. He goes from 25 touchdowns to 21, from 8 picks to 14. But if you watch the games like we did, I mean, there's a lot of pressure up there. And he had a ton of drops this year. I don't got the numbers in front of me, but if you tell me, like, which quarterback had one of the worst drop catch rates for him, it was Trevor Lawrence. These aren't just drops that – don't matter. These are touchdowns. These are big plays and plays that can really change the game. So if you can change one or two of those things, I think his season changes. And then, I mean, the biggest thing, you look at it. When he was healthy, he was playing well. When he wasn't healthy, he wasn't. So if you can keep this guy clean, you got Morris, you keep the center position, you improve that, you keep him clean, you don't have pressure in your face up the middle, which is the worst type of pressure you can get for a quarterback, he's going to improve based off of being able to keep him protected and keep him clean. So I'm still high on Trevor. I think he's going to come back and have a bounce back year this year. And I think the Jaguars, people are counting him out. Obviously, you got the Texans and the Colts are looking good, but I still think the Jaguars are right up there with the Texans and can compete for this division.
Clay, as we begin to wrap up, the last time you and I talked was right after the season. Fast forward to where we are now. After free agency, after the draft, are they better? Is this a better roster now than it was when they walked off the field in Nashville on January 7th?
I think so. I think they've improved. And I know people will say, you know, you lost Zay, you lost Calvin Ridley. But I'm a big Calvin Ridley and Zay Jones guy. But, I mean, they didn't have the best year, either of them. And Calvin had a lot of drops, a lot of big drops, too. And he couldn't get on the same page with Trevor. So I think that loss isn't going to weigh as heavy as some people might think, and he just wasn't worth that money. And I think defensively, they're a better defense. I know a cornerback's going to look a lot different. You lost a couple of your big guys there, but I really like this defense. I think they improved. Eric Armstead on that defensive line, you locked up Josh Allen. You got Trevon Walker getting a year older. The guy's still young. He's going to improve. So for me, this is a better team. You got better generals out there, especially on defense with Nielsen. I think Doug is going to get the offense where it needs to be, and I think this team will improve this year.
Former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor. Clay, final question. You alluded to it. The AFC South, rewind the clock back 12 months. Coming into 23, it might have been the most boring division in football, maybe the worst division in football. It was certainly in the argument. And now here we are in May of 24. I'm not sure if there's a more compelling division in football, quite frankly, with the Texans, the Jags, Anthony Richardson coming back with Indianapolis, and Tennessee spent like $1 billion in free agency. What's your thought on the division as we head into the year?
I think it's a tough division, and nobody can deny that. I think, you know, the Colts are flying under the radar, but I think their team, if Anthony Richardson stays healthy, I love the pick of Latu. I love them getting AD Mitchell at 52. I thought that was a steal. I think with Pittman and Mitchell and obviously everything they got over there, they're going to be a tough out. Latu can play. I think that the Texans, obviously you got Diggs, right? He's coming. You got Tank Dell. It's just a tough team with a lot of players. So the Texans, if you look at it, yeah, they're the favorites. But to me, the Jaguars improved too. So I think this division went from being one of the worst divisions in football to a top-tier division. I think you got quarterbacks that are going to show that they're the top tier of quarterbacks. I think Richardson's good. I think, obviously, Lawrence can play. And then, obviously, everybody knows what C.J. Stroud was able to do. So when it comes down to it, tough division. It's going to be competitive. But I still think, and I'm not just saying this because I was a former Jag and I love my Jags, I still think that they can pull this thing out and make the playoffs this year. And I'm still confident they'll do that.
Jaguar fans will love to hear that. Clay Harbor spent some time here in Jacksonville, a very long, successful NFL career as well. Clay, hard to believe this, man, but the next time you and I talk, we'll be previewing training camp as this offseason is absolutely flying on by. Thank you as always, pal. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
There you go. Former Jaguar Clay Harbor here with us on Hacker After Dark. And, yeah, look, the AFC South, as Clay alluded to, you know, I talk about this a lot with a lot of the guys that I have on that cover the league. In August of 2023, during training camp, during the preseason going into last year, you could have made the real legit argument the AFC South was the worst division in football. Certainly the worst division in the AFC. I mean, it was thought to be a laughingstock. And now here we are, 8 months later, 8.5 months later. Is it the best division in football? Maybe not, but it's in the conversation. Honestly, think about it. All right, AFC East, who are your top three? Buffalo, Miami, all right, and the Jets. We'll see. Patriots are terrible. AFC North, that's a pretty good one. If everybody's healthy, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland. AFC West, everybody was bad last year except the Chiefs. NFC East, they all eat each other. Philly and Dallas are good. The Giants and the Commanders are bad. NFC North, yuck. NFC West, no. And NFC South, double yuck. So honestly, other than the AFC North, is there a better division in the NFL than the AFC South right now? With the Houston Texans coming off a 10-win and a playoff win season. Colts had 9 wins. Jaguars had 9 wins. The bottom feeder was Tennessee, and they weren't half bad. They went into Miami and beat the Dolphins on Monday Night Football. They knocked the Jaguars out of the playoffs. The AFC South, very quickly, man, has gone from maybe the worst division to certainly one of the best divisions. Halftime in Orlando, they're just about to start the third quarter. Magic have to win to keep their season alive. Game 6, Eastern Conference first round. They lead Cleveland 53-49. A Magic win would force it back to Cleveland for a Game 7 on Sunday. A Cleveland win would advance them to face the Boston Celtics. Only 2 first-round series are still going. 6 of them are done. Orlando-Cleveland, and tonight, Game 6, Mavericks-Clippers. Clippers need to win to keep their season alive. And in fact, tomorrow night, the Western Conference semifinals begin. I believe tomorrow night's Game 1, Nuggets-Timberwolves. The Thunder are waiting for the winner of Dallas and the Clippers. In the East, we know it's going to be Indiana-New York. How about that? Stirring up echoes of 30 years ago and Reggie Miller in Madison Square Garden. Pacers-Knicks on one side. The Celtics are waiting for the winner of Cleveland and Orlando. Again, Orlando up by 4, third quarter, trying to force it back to Cleveland for a Game 7. We will keep you updated. Coming up next, back into the Jaguars, back into the National Football League. My buddy John Shipley does a terrific job for Jaguar Report. And he's always kind enough to join us next. Let's talk draft. Let's talk future. What do the Jaguars need to do with this roster now post-draft? And let's talk about the release earlier this week of wide receiver Zay Jones. Friday evening, Jacksonville, Florida. We're glad you're with us. It's Hacker After Dark right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. We're glad you're with us. The draft has come and gone. What did the Jaguars accomplish during the NFL draft? And we've already seen some of the ramifications. Kicker Joey Sly, well, he was here less than 2 months. He has been released, and wide receiver Zay Jones has been released. Let's begin right there with my buddy John Shipley. You read his terrific work at Jaguar Report, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. John, how you doing?
Doing good, my friend. How you doing?
John, we're good. Thank you for the time. And look, Zay Jones, released by the Jaguars. I think a lot of Jaguar fans, after the drafting of Brian Thomas, probably saw the writing on the wall. People were hoping that Zay could remain here in some capacity, but that was proven not to be the case, released by the team earlier this week.
Yeah, no, it just never made much sense for Zay Jones to stay on the roster. And there are a few different reasons. One is they would have been paying him $10 million to be, A, the fourth receiver, and D, their fifth pass catcher, if you throw in Evan Engram in there behind him. And even though they have the cap space, they could do that. You know, that could have been an option. No team in the NFL is going to do that. It's bad business. And then, two, Zay Jones, you know, if you're a four receiver in the NFL, you have to provide special teams value because you're not starting on offense. And Zay Jones has played a little over 100 special team snaps in his career. He's played 2 with the Jaguars. So he just didn't have the special teams versatility. He wasn't going to be a starting receiver. That's too much money for a pure backup. And then they have some young guys they like. You know, they want to see how Parker Washington develops. They want to see how Elijah Cooks develops. They have some interesting undrafted free agents. Josh Cephas from UTSA. He's a guy who a lot of people thought would go late day 3. So they have some intriguing talent at those number 5 and number 6, potentially number 7 spots. But the number 4 spots are locked up between Thomas Jr., Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, and Devin Duvernay.
You know, look, it's a business. We all understand that. But still, I think the fan base is sad to see Zay go. He was not here very long. But boy, the fan base really responded to Zay Jones. What was your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Zay's a likable, you know, guy and personality who a lot of fans latch onto. And I think the big thing with the Jaguars is, you know, Zay Jones was here for their most successful season in, you know, almost a decade. I mean, when there's been that much bad football here, fans are going to really attach themselves to anything that's relatively positive. So I really think that was the big thing. But, you know, Zay, you know, definitely was a fan favorite. You know, he was a stand-up guy in the locker room. You know, this wasn't anything that was off the field related or anything. It just it's simply after the addition of Thomas, didn't make much sense for him to still be on the roster.
Boy, for what you and I do, losing Zay Jones and Rayshon Jenkins in the same offseason, we're going to have to find some new go-to guys in that Jaguar locker room. There is no doubt about that. Quickly, before we get to the draft, the Jarvis Landry thing that came out earlier this week, that he's going to participate in rookie minicamp, a five-time Pro Bowler looking to make a comeback, hasn't played since 2022. I guess, John, it could be nothing. It could be something. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's closer to being nothing. I mean, it'd be different if they had signed him to a contract to where he'd be there, you know, throughout the offseason and doing training camp and on the 90-man roster. I think people would just, you know, letting things get a bit ahead of them. He's not on the 90-man roster right now. It's a tryout player, and they've had tryout players, veterans in the past who have come in and who haven't made the team, and they've had others who have. I remember Jacob Harris was a tryout player, so maybe he gets a spot on the 90-man roster for training camp, but I'm closer to thinking it's nothing more than it is something.
John Shipley of Jaguar Report. I would probably tend to agree with you there. All right, to the draft class. Let's talk about Brian Thomas individually now. They chose him over a couple of corners, Quinyon Mitchell, and they actually passed on Terrion Arnold twice with the trade back. So they take Brian Thomas to go with Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, Evan Engram, as you mentioned. Your thoughts on Brian Thomas and how he fits into this Jaguar offense?
Yeah, no, I think that Brian Thomas definitely adds a speed and vertical element that they haven't had, really, in my opinion, Trevor Lawrence's entire career. He's had two deep threats his entire career. DJ Chark, who he only played a handful of games with due to his injury in 2021, and then Calvin Ridley last year. But Ridley's not a true de facto, you know, deep threat receiver. He can do it, but he's best used in other ways. Thomas is completely different. He's going to make his bread and butter pushing the field vertically. His speed brings something that defenses have to account for. And he has the physical traits to develop into a receiver beyond that kind of role. I would expect that to be his main role as a rookie. But it's not like he's, you know, Gabe Davis, who is more or less what he is as a player right now. Thomas has the traits and the physical ability and athleticism to grow into a fully well-rounded receiver, potentially maybe even a number one receiver down the road.
They went to LSU three times, Brian Thomas in round one, Mason Smith in round two, and Jordan Jefferson in round four. What did you make of the two big defensive tackles from LSU, yeah, both being drafted by the Jags?
I'm not surprised to see the kind of negative reaction to the Mason Smith pick locally and nationally, just because he's a guy who, you know, wasn't ranked that high on most, you know, media boards and mock drafts and stuff. But people need to understand one thing. He was never getting out of round two. He was not getting the number 96 overall. Players with that kind of frame and that kind of athleticism, they simply don't grow on trees, especially in recent draft classes. Some team would have coveted those traits, and the Jaguars obviously one of them. And that's not to say it's a sure thing that he develops, but he's somebody who genuinely has Chris Jones level potential. Now, he very well could be Rashid Hageman instead, maybe even Robert Nkandichi, two other guys with those kind of traits who didn't pan out. But the traits are there. If you go back to his 2021 tape, he really was dominant as an 18-year-old in the SEC, but the last 2 years were basically moot. You know, he missed an entire year of injury, and then last year he was recovering from the injury. It really felt like he was just trying to get through the season and get to the draft to declare. So the Jaguars basically have to build him from the ground up because he hasn't played enough football, got enough reps during his college career. But the traits are there, and I'm a big believer in traits. And, I mean, in my opinion, he wasn't even the most questionable defensive tackle pick of that round. Devondre Sweat going, I think it was 38th overall, with his off-field issues and the fact that he's a 360-pound nose tackle who offers no value on third downs, I'm surprised that hasn't been the most pan pick of the round instead of Smith. And then Jefferson, I think Jefferson has solid tape for like a backup rotational nose tackle. He's a really good run defender. He's obviously strong at the point of attack. He has a good first step, but there's not a lot of upside with him specifically as a pass rusher. He's likely a guy you rotate in on early down. So I don't think there's anything wrong with the player. It's just the reason why he wasn't mocked as highly as he went was because most backup nose tackle prospects don't go fourth round.
A couple of more for John Shipley of Jaguar Report. John, I remember the Trent Baalke press conference to end the year back in, I think it was late January, early February. And everybody at that point was talking about Calvin Ridley and Josh Allen and what the future's held there. But one of the things Baalke said was on the lines of scrimmage, on the O-line and the D-line, We need to get tougher. We need to get physical, man. We need to get more more strength out there. And look at what they did this offseason. They re-sign Ezra Cleveland. They bring in Mitch Morse. They draft Javon Foster from Missouri. And defensively, Trevis Gibson, Eric Armstead, the three draft picks, the two LSU kids, and Miles Cole out of Texas Tech. That's eight guys, all 280-plus on both lines of scrimmage. Balky did essentially exactly what he said he was going to do.
Exactly. He told us in January he was going to attack the trenches. He more or less said that he thought a failure to run the ball and a failure to stop the run with their big Achilles heels down the end of the stretch last year. So nobody should be surprised. Everybody, I think, should have known that he was going to attack the trenches often in this draft. I honestly would say most mocks even had him going defensive line at number 48, one, because of that, and two, because the defensive line class really fell off past the 50th pick or so. So him putting such a focus on addressing the trenches at both defensive tackle spots and getting a swing tackle didn't really surprise me, especially considering they're changing schemes. And there's some of their internal defensive linemen who they already had who are questionable fits in a 4-3 scheme, whether it's Adam Gostisch or Tyler Lacy.
Couple of corners, John, went as well. Jerrion Jones in round 3. Deontre Prince at Ole Miss in round 5. They passed on corner a couple of times in rounds 1 and 2. They land Jones and Prince. How much of a factor are those guys going to be in the rotation? How do you see their futures?
I think Jones probably be the day one starting slot corner. I know Doug Peterson talked about Darnell Savage in that role, et cetera, and you could probably still – play him in the slot some, but I think when they come out on, you know, in week one, I think Jones should be starting in the secondary in the slot. He's really athletic, really strong run defender. You know, he's good in man coverage. I think he offers them a lot of, you know, potential moving forward in that spot. I know they've talked about him being an inside out guy, but I truthfully think he's probably just an inside guy. I mean, you go look back at his FSU tape as an outside guy, and he was their fan base's like public enemy number one before he moved to the slot and ended up having the best year of his career, and that's for a reason. He's just a better fit in the slot. Prince is a guy who I liked throughout the process. He had a great 40 time. He had one of the best 10-yard splits of any cornerback in recent history. He has experience in press coverage. To me, he has more tools than some of the other late-round corner guys they've taken in the past, like Monteric Brown or Gregory Jr., et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. Again, people think Prince might have been a good value pick in round 5. And again, Jerrion Jones, 96 there in round number 3. Finally, special teams, right? I mean, the new kickoff rule, they brought in Duvernay, but you have to have two returners, so they draft Keelan Robinson out of Texas. And Cam Little, I'm sure you were a part of that Zoom call, maybe the most interesting Zoom call of a kicker in franchise history. That 20-year-old is not lacking for confidence, and now that the Jaguars have cut Joey Sly, it appears Cam Little is going to have that job, right, in 2024?
I think the only way he doesn't win that job is if he opens up training camp with sending a few footballs Dave Campo's way. I mean, they use the draft pick on him. To me, he's clearly going to win a job, and Riley Patterson will be the practice squad kicker. I think that's how it has to be when you use a pick on a kicker, even if it's a 6-round pick.
And then, John, look, I mean, as we wrap up, again, John Shipley of Jaguar Report, they have money, right? I mean, they got a lot of money. I think they had the third most salary cap room in the league right now, and then they just got another $5 million when you cut Jones and Sly. I mean, whether it is an edge rusher, whether it is a corner, there's, what, Stephon Gilmore, Xavien Howard, there's even talk about Marshawn Lattimore. Are they going to add somebody? I mean, you and I did this song and dance last year at OTA, as we kept saying. They got to add somebody. They never did. Do you think they've learned that lesson? They'll bring in a veteran or two this year.
The way they tell it, they tried to, and he just signed with the Baltimore Ravens, you know. So I could see them trying to bring a guy in. I've stopped trying to rationalize their edge rush position. It hasn't made sense to me since the beginning of last offseason. I don't know how you go into a season with your edge depth looking like this, because you can say this about every position. If your number one guy goes down, you're in trouble. I truthfully believe every team can say that about every starting position. But the Jags are in more trouble at edge than they would be at any other position on the team. Like the fact that both Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker, and Josh Allen played through some stuff last year, were able to play all of last year was something extremely lucky and isn't something the Jaguars should count on again. So I think they should look at a veteran guy. whether that's a Bud Dupree or Carl Lawson, whoever, but I'm just not sure if they're going to.
What about a veteran corner? Could that be in the cards?
I think it'd make a lot of sense. I think if you can get a guy, maybe trade for Marshawn Lattimore, who a lot of people think has fallen out with the Saints front office, or maybe you bring in a guy like Xavier Howard to see if he can still run. I think it would make sense because you at the very least have some insurance with Darby, so you can shop around but still be okay if you don't land one.
John, final question. They're better now than they were on January 7th, right? I mean, obviously Ridley left, and that was a big deal, and they've had other issues. But by and large, the roster on late April, beginning of May, as opposed to when the season ended in Nashville, it's a better roster on paper, correct?
I think so. I think that entering, you know, the real draft process after the postseason, they were better on the offensive line. They're better on the defensive line. Everything, you know, secondary, all that was a wash. And they were a worse at receiver. Well, now they just, you know, invested a first-round pick in the receiver. So I think their biggest question entering the draft, they answered. You know, they filled some of the other spots that they needed. They're definitely better along the defensive line. They have the potential to be better in the secondary than they were a year ago. I definitely agree that this is an improved roster compared to a year ago. And I'm not sure I would have had that take after the 2023 draft. And I think that means something.
John, let them know about Jaguar Report. I know you and Gus have the podcast as well. Where can they find you?
Yes, sir. You guys can find us at Jaguar Report, the Jaguar Report podcast on YouTube. We'll have an episode out later today. Sub to us on YouTube, and you'll be the first ones every week to get our episodes. You can also find us at si.com/NFL/Jaguars.
John Shipley does a terrific job covering the Jaguars. He's certainly one of our guys here on Hacker After Dark. John, thank you as always. I'll see you out at OTAs.
Thank you, man.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Halftime here on Hacker After Dark. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We'll take you up till 10 o'clock tonight, as we do every night here on Hacker After Dark, with the caveat being, well, next week. Next week, Rick Ballew is on vacation, so we will be 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock next Monday through Friday, 6 to 8, right here with you on Hacker After Dark. Cleveland leads Orlando by 5, heading to the fourth quarter, 78-73. A Cleveland win advances them to play Boston in round number 2. I'll say this, and maybe this is sour grapes. Cleveland's better than Orlando, and they're going to beat us. They're probably going to close us out tonight. I told you that on Wednesday. But they've got a little cocky attitude to them tonight. It is going to be a pleasure. Now, again, they're better than Orlando. They're better than us. They're going to beat us. Tip your cap to them. But they got a little cockiness to them. It is going to be an absolute pleasure watching Boston absolutely beat the crap out of these guys. All right? And maybe that's sour grapes on my part. Again, they're going to knock my team out. Kudos. But they made the mistake of throwing the game to end the regular season because they wanted Orlando in the 4-5. All right, well, you got that. And hard-fought battle, you're probably going to advance. But in throwing that game means you get Boston in round 2. Best of luck with that. Best of luck with that. I don't think that series will go more than 4 or 5 games for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Boston's just really good. That Miami team was pretty good, and Boston wiped the floor with them 3 games in a row. I would love to see Boston and the Knicks. I think the theater there would be amazing in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I find it hard to believe that anybody in the East is going to give Boston much of a challenge. Quickly, Denmark, tomorrow, the Kentucky Derby. Normally, or I guess usually, the Kentucky Derby doesn't really sneak up on me like this, I guess because I've had NBA playoff fever. You know, normally I only ask the Magic to get me to March Madness because usually they're out of it by then. But they not only got me to March Madness, they got me through the entire month of April and now here into May. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, the Kentucky Derby is tomorrow. The Derby do anything for you?
Nothing.
It doesn't do anything for me either, although you know what's funny? It is on my bucket list.
To go?
To go. I don't have any idea about horse racing. I've never attended a horse racing event. But if I had a bucket list of things that as a sports fan I would like to go to once in my life.
What's your top 3?
Boy, Now, some of these I'm a fan. I'd love to go to Wimbledon.
Okay.
Would absolutely love to go to Wimbledon. Would love to go to the Masters, to an actual competitive round of the Masters. The Kentucky Derby probably isn't in my top three, but it would certainly be on the list. What about you?
Okay. Kentucky Derby's probably top 10. Yeah, I like to go to the Masters.
Maybe a World Cup game in Europe?
Yeah, maybe a soccer game. The Super Bowl is not on my bucket list. That is way too many people inside and outside. And Super Bowl is just better on TV. It's not basketball. It's not baseball.
See, I almost think for like a bucket list can be anything you want. I guess the way I think of it is more like the obscure stuff, like the Kentucky Derby, like Wimbledon. You know, I've been to a Daytona 500.
Yeah, I've been to plenty of those.
Maybe the Indy 500. I don't know. I've never been to an
My dad went to Indy when NASCAR opened it back in the 90s, and you can't see the whole track.
Oh,
I mean,
is
that
right?
It's cool to be there, but, I mean, you just see, like, one straightaway, and, like, that's it.
Huh.
You know?
Interesting.
Because there's grandstands behind the pits and on the, you know, the checkered flag side. So you can't – you only see, like, not even half the track.
And, again, I don't know anything about the horses in there tomorrow or the owners or the jockeys or any of that stuff. But I imagine I will watch those 3 minutes of the Kentucky Derby tomorrow. What is it, usually about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening? I will probably tune in to check it out. Would love to go there someday. That's certainly on the bucket list. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Ryan Fowler, Bleacher Report. He's towards the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, talking NFL, AFC South, and more. Coming up next, JP Acosta, SB Nation. First time I've had JP on Hacker After Dark. It will not be the last. Really enjoy the conversation with JP. We'll talk Jags. We'll talk AFC South. We'll talk the future of the roster moving forward. Now the free agency, for the most part, and, of course, the draft are in the rearview mirror. With Dylan Denmark, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. It is a Friday night in Jacksonville, Florida. We're glad you're with us. Hacker After Dark, JP Acosta, SB Nation, coming up next. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Boy, there's a lot of Jaguar news that has come out. Of course, the draft that happened this past weekend up in Detroit, 9 new Jaguars selected, and the release of Zay Jones, which maybe wasn't unexpected, but still, Jaguar fans probably find it hard to see Zay walk out the door. Let's talk about all of it with JP Acosta of SB Nation. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. JP, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, JP, always appreciate the time, man. All right, before we get into the draft, let's talk about Zay Jones. Look, after they drafted Brian Thomas, you probably knew the writing was on the wall. I think people still were hoping that Zay could find a spot on this roster. He was certainly a fan favorite. But at the end of the day, the Jaguars released him Tuesday morning. What was your reaction?
So, to me, this signaled that the biggest additions for the Jacksonville Jaguars receiver room were very similar to what Zay Jones already brought to the team. With the way that they structured his contract and his ability to and their ability to get out of that contract this offseason without eating too much dead cap, I think this made a lot of sense financially for the Jaguars and for where they want to go as a team. I mean, when you look at what Brian Thomas Jr.'s skill set is right now and you look at what Gabe Davis does, they all are very similar to what Zay Jones brought to the offense. So it kind of makes Zay Jones a bit more expendable in that case. So this felt like a move that needed to happen. Zay Jones, obviously, throughout the 2022 playoff run, had amazing plays, amazing moments, but just couldn't stay healthy last year.
Well, I'll tell you, JP, life comes at you pretty quick. I remember being down at training camp and seeing Zay Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Christian Kirk. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, they got this trio for at least the next couple of years. And now here we are 8 months later. Ridley's in Nashville and Zay Jones has been released. Just goes to show you how the NFL is a very, very quick moving business. It is a shame, though, for the fan base. And I know you interact with fans a bunch on social media as I do. Clearly, Zay was one of their favorites. So this one stings a little bit.
Yeah, this one stings definitely for what he brought to that 2022 playoff run. I will always remember the touchdown to open, I believe, the third quarter against the Chargers in the playoffs. It's those types of moments that you're going to remember Zay Jones for outside of whatever happened last year. Last year was very much a wild year for the Jaguars, but I think fans should remember him for what good he brought to the team during that 2022 run.
Yeah, the deep touchdown catch against Dallas, and heck, even last year in an injury-riddled season, he had two of the best catches of the season, opening day in Indy and then in London against Buffalo. So Zay is out because Brian Thomas is here. And you alluded to Brian Thomas earlier, JP. Again, JP Acosta of SB Nation here with us. What do you think of that wide receiver room now with Thomas, with Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk? You would imagine Zay being released is probably good news for Parker Washington, Devin Duvernay, and then we'll see if they keep six wide receivers. But your thoughts on the wide receiver room as it sits right now?
So with the Brian Thomas Jr. addition, it sounds like and it feels like the Jaguars want to be more explosive throwing the ball downfield. That was something that the Jaguars offense last year tried to do, but couldn't do it consistently. With Brian Thomas Jr.'s skill set right now, he is very much he's going to run two routes. He's going to run a slot fade, and he's going to run a stop route. But those are two things that the Jaguars really need in the offense. Trevor Lawrence has not had a big downfield target in his career in Jacksonville. Zay Jones was the closest thing to it. So getting him a guy like Brian Thomas will help open up the offense a lot more. It signals that they want to throw the ball downfield a little bit more in 2024 and then allow Christian Kirk to kind of work the in-between areas. So now you have a bunch of guys that are better complements to each other in this offense.
Were you surprised they went wide receiver over corner in round one? I mean, at 17, Mitchell and Arnold were both on the board. And even after the trade back to 23, Arnold was still on the board, and they went Brian Thomas. That catch you off guard at all?
It did catch me a little off guard just because of the quality of corners that were still on the board, especially with Terry and Arnold being there. You know, Ennis Reckestraw was still there through the second round. It really did kind of take me a little bit off guard, but when you think about what this Jaguars team is going into in 2024, with the fifth-year option for Trevor Lawrence being picked up, obviously, he is about to be a very rich player. So you want to be able to surround your very rich quarterback with the necessary weapons to become one of the legit teams in the AFC. So it makes sense for them to do this instead of going corner round one.
JP Acosta of SB Nation. All right, JP, as we begin to look at other draft picks, Mason Smith might have the most attention nationally. Some people, including myself, are very high on that pick. Others seemingly are very low on that pick. What was your thought with the defensive tackle out of LSU?
I was stunned that the Jaguars picked him at 48. I thought they could have gotten him at 96, but after sitting and kind of thinking about it for a little bit, this feels like the Trent Baalke swing. You know, this feels like a Trent Baalke guy. Mason Smith is huge, massive player, long arms, very athletic. The play did not match the caliber of play that he brought in 2021 when he was a freshman, but the knee injury really kind of sapped a lot of what he did in 2023. You could still see he was trying to recover from it. So I think if they get 2021 Mason Smith, then it is a home run pick because Mason Smith in 2021 was a game wrecker. But if it still ends up being 2023 Smith and he's not ready yet, you know, then we have to go look back at some guys who were still on the board, especially with the cornerbacks available, and be like, hey, maybe you could have gotten this guy a little later as your swing, but this feels very much like your prototypical Trent Baalke defensive tackle pick.
I agree. And then even in round four, they go Jordan Jefferson, Smith, and Thomas's teammate from LSU. And I go back, JP, to what Trent Baalke said at the postseason press conference. This was probably a couple of weeks after the season ended in January. You know, everybody was curious about Josh Allen and Calvin Ridley. But one of the things he said then, we got to get bigger, more physical, and tougher on the line of scrimmage, all right? And look at their offseason. On the offensive side, re-sign Ezra Cleveland, bring in Mitch Morse, draft Javon Foster from Missouri. On the defensive side, Eric Armstead, Trevis Gibson, and then a second rounder on Mason Smith, the fourth rounder on Jordan Jefferson, and I'll even add the seventh rounder in Miles Cole. They brought in eight guys, all 280-plus. They're going to make that defensive line and offensive line physical and tough, maybe more so than it was a year ago. Trent Baalke laid out the blueprint in January, if people were paying attention, and he followed through with what he said. You got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, he knew exactly what he wanted to do going in, and a lot of the players that they acquired this offseason really do fit Ryan Nielsen's defensive game plan, what Ryan Nielsen wants to do. Again, of course, comes from Atlanta as a defensive coordinator, but before that, he was in New Orleans as their defensive line coach. New Orleans has a lot of big, mean, and physical defensive linemen. That's what they pride themselves on. You think about guys like Cameron Jordan. You think about guys like Peyton Turner, who they've taken swings on in the first round. Not necessarily the most refined of pass rushers, but they're big, long-armed, and physical. And that's something that the Jaguars are going to want to bring to this defensive line, to the offensive line as well. And you can just see it in the draft picks. You know, I think Miles Cole at the end of the draft is very much a Ryan Nielsen swing on a player because of how big and how long he is. So you're getting a whole lot more physical, like you said, but you're just getting bigger up front. They needed depth, and they needed to get bigger on that side of the ball, especially as we saw guys like Devon Hamilton kind of wear down towards the end of the season.
Couple more for J.P. Acosta of SB Nation. They did not take Quinyon Mitchell. They did not take Terrion Arnold. They did, in round three, take Jerrion Jones from Florida State. They circled back in round five with DeAndre Prince from Ole Miss. By all indications, maybe Prince was a good value pick in round five. Some people really like Jones out of FSU. What was your reaction to the two corners they did draft?
I really like Jerrion Jones. I really do think that he was a good pick there because of his versatility. Started out outside at Florida State, but then moved inside the nickel. Florida State played a lot of man coverage last year. They left those guys out on islands, and they told them to win. And that's something that I think Ryan Nielsen's going to want to bring to this defense. DeAndre Prince is a really good athlete, can play on the outside. The biggest thing is they provide depth. I think the Jaguar secondary didn't have a lot of depth, especially at cornerback. And it showed when Tyson Campbell went out. And you saw that when you played guys like Buster Brown a lot, they became the target of a lot of opposing offenses. So now you've added depth, you added competition, and I think Jerrion Jones can compete for snaps right away.
It's certainly an interesting pick. And boy, Jerrion Jones was unbelievably fired up to be a Jaguar. I don't know if that means anything, but, man, the excitement he had about coming to Duval County is certainly going to resonate with fans, I would imagine. And then the other guys, Keelan Robinson, I think, is a direct result of the new kickoff rule, right? You're going to have two return men. They already got Devin Duvernay. You bring in Robinson from Texas, see what he has. And then it's clear, based on Tuesday morning, not only did Zay Jones get released, but Joey Sly, the Joey Sly era of Jaguar football is over about 7 weeks after it started, that Cam Little, the sixth rounder from Arkansas, has got to be the leader in the clubhouse to be the kicker for this team in 2024.
Yeah, and from the people that I've talked to, they said that Cam Little was the best kicker in the draft. And so that's a really big plus for getting that guy, not even as the first kicker off the board. So it's a huge plus for the Jaguars to grab him. Keelan Robinson, like you said, this is a special teams pick. Because of the new special teams rules, you have two returners back there, and now you get a lot more explosive in the return game with Devin Duvernay and Keelan Robinson back there. He is going to provide a lot of special teams depth. He can be explosive back there. So I really do like the Cam Little pick. I think I'm very much a don't draft kickers person, but when you're able to get value like Cam Little in the late rounds of the draft, I think that's a really smart pick by Jacksonville.
Final moments with J.P. Acosta of SB Nation. J.P., they got a ton of money, man. I mean, with Jones and Sly, I think they saved $5 million. So some websites have them over $30 million in cap room. Now, you got a lot of extensions coming up, and we understand that, including Trevor. But they still got a bunch of money. And whether it's Marshawn Lattimore, Xavien Howard, Stephon Gilmore at the cornerback, you know, Bud Dupree, guys like that, there are veterans available on defense Do you see a veteran corner or potentially a veteran edge rusher being brought in here in the coming weeks and or months?
I would love to see them add another veteran to the cornerback room. I'd love to see them add a guy like Marshawn Lattimore. If Carlton Davis can go from Tampa to Detroit on a third-round pick, I think something around there would make sense for Marshawn Lattimore. Maybe a third, fourth-round pick would do the deal for you. I think Xavier Howard might be on the little older side, a little longer in the tooth. Stephon Gilmore really does fit what they want to do in terms of man coverage on defense. But I think Marshawn Lattimore should be, if they're trading for a guy, Marshawn Lattimore should be that guy. And they could stand to add another veteran pass rusher. I think with the way that they have built their defense, they need to have those rotations of waves in a pass rush unit. I think the depth along there, I think Trevis Gibson is going to be really good as a number three pass rusher behind Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker. But it wouldn't hurt to add another guy. I could see a Bud Dupree, but above anything else, I think Marshawn Lattimore should be the prime candidate for the Jaguars if they're looking to add another veteran to the room.
JP, final question. When they walked off the field in Nashville January 7th, that was the end of maybe the biggest late season collapse in Jaguar history. The fan base was frustrated. The team was frustrated. I mean, they fired a coordinator and 10 assistants. They've had a ton of turnover on this roster. You could argue a third of the roster will be different on opening day 2024 than what it was on January 7th when the season ended. Are they better? Are they a better football team now than they were when the season ended on January 7th?
I think defensively they are better. I think they're better coordinated. They'll be better coached. And I think that the goal for them is going to be different defensively than what it was under Mike Caldwell. Offensively, I would say they're a little bit better. It just depends on how much of the problem do people think the offensive line was to the Jaguars' offense being a hindrance. For me, it was the offensive line was the biggest problem. So I would say they are better because of the addition of Mitch Morse gives them a veteran there. I think having a Javon Foster can potentially be a swing tackle and could possibly be the left tackle of the future, depending on what happens with Cam Robinson and Walker Little. But I would say they've gotten a little bit better. It just depends on what you think this offense wants to be in 2024. Are they going to go away from being the more brutally efficient? We're going to move the ball in 5 to 10 yard bursts. And they're just gonna go in 2024 and be more explosive downfield. If you see it like that, then you say, yeah, they got a little better. But if they still want to do that same brutally efficient thing, then maybe, you know, it's not too much of a change. But defensively, I would say they've gotten a lot better.
JP Acosta of SB Nation. JP, always appreciate the time. Man, thank you as always, and we'll do it again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar draft in the rearview mirror, 9 selections in all. The question is, how did they do? Did they reach for anybody? And 3 LSU Tigers. Pretty interesting. Let's talk about all of it with my buddy Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report. He does a great job covering the NFL and the NFL draft, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ryan. Always appreciate you having me on.
Hey, Ryan, thank you. I know it was a very busy weekend for you during the draft. And all right, let's dive right in. Brian Thomas, they had the 17th pick. They traded back, of course, to 23. Actually, let's begin there. They trade 6 spots down, Ryan, and get a third and a fourth in 2025. Man, I thought that was good value for Trent Baalke and the Jaguars.
I'm right there with you. Heading into this draft, I had a few questions in Brian Thomas's game, but as you mentioned, you trade back, you get more picks, and you get that type of talent on the outside to pair with Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk. I absolutely love the addition. Now, Trevor Lawrence, obviously the team Not shockingly, of course, expressed their you know, fifth-year option for Trevor. He's the guy moving forward, as we know, and to get him more weapons on the outside, and a guy like Brian to where immediately, Ryan, I look at this roster, he's not going to have all the attention of a defense on his game. He's going to be somebody that's going to be facing isolated matchups early in his career, and he's someone that we know that can press vertically what he did at LSU. But I think working within the smaller, the shallower, intermediate areas, that physical type of ball player, something that he's going to improve on early in his career. He's going to be that three-level threat for this Jaguars offense to where we know Trevor can dissect the shallow areas and then toss that thing deep to a 6'2", 6'3", Brian Thomas that can absolutely run. I love the pick, and as you mentioned, trading back and getting more selections.
All right, Ryan, they went back to Baton Rouge in round number two. Mason Smith, the big defensive tackle. This is one that's gotten a lot of attention, both positive and negative. Your thoughts on Mason Smith, boy, an all-freshman SEC talent in 2021, of course, had the knee injury in 22. Jaguars take him in round number two. What did you make of that?
I like the pick. I think if we flash back a couple of years ago, Ryan, Mason Smith is a projected top 15 guy out of that unbelievable freshman year, as you mentioned. And he comes into this Jacksonville defense now to where they brought in, of course, Eric Armstead. He's going to compete with him. Roy Robertson Harris, is he still the guy that you want playing potentially 80, 95% of the snaps along the defensive line? I'm not sure he is that guy. And of course, Devon Hamilton is still there, but now you get that big physical vertical type of pusher along your defensive line that I think can play the one, he can play three tech. He can bounce around the defensive line and provide more versatility. And also on those third downs, he can pin his ears back a little bit and take eyes off of Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker on the outside, who are obviously going to draw attention themselves. So I like the pick. I even think he's a little bit of an underrated name coming into this class to where he even had some first-round buzz in the days leading up to the draft in Detroit. So I do like the selection, and I think he's going to be a good ball player here in 2024.
Ryan, I agree with you, but why do you think some of your colleagues nationally are panning that pick a little bit?
Yeah, I think when you look at the injuries in the past, that always scares people. I mean, we saw it with a guy like Jonathan Brooks. We saw, obviously, the slide of a guy like Peyton Wilson. Both those guys I've loved in this class, specifically with Peyton Wilson going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is a fit that is unbelievable. But for me, I think there's a prospect fatigue a little bit going with Mason Smith because he was so good so long ago, and now he's post-injury. Even seen with a guy like Christian Mahogany from Boston College that went to the Detroit Lions late on day three, who was a potential top 50 lock pre-ACL injury. So I think just sometimes we get a little too cute on the evaluations of players, and you look at the size, you look at the strength, you look at the twitch in his lower half. Again, no worries for me on early downs, so his ability to anchor against ISO or duo in the middle. I just like the pick, and I think he's going to be someone that's going to compete right away, Ryan.
Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report. While we're on LSU, let's go to the third LSU Tiger. Another defensive lineman, a big defensive lineman in Jordan Jefferson, I believe had the most reps on the bench press at the combine of anybody in the draft. What do you make of Jefferson going in round number four?
I'll tell you this. I like Jordan Jefferson as much as I like Mason Smith. I think this is a hell of a value addition for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I loved watching Jordan Jefferson at West Virginia, at LSU, and watching him down at the Senior Bowl. He was one of my standouts in Mobile post-Senior Bowl, whether it was one-on-ones, team drills, run game. I loved what I saw from Jordan Jefferson. Now, not the biggest guy in the world, but you mentioned the fundamental strength that he has in his upper half. He plays with leverage well. He's just as strong as an ox in the middle, and he also has that twitch that you need within the interior to push on passing downs. And I think he's going to be someone as that rotational piece, Ryan, to come in as a one-tech, three-tech, similar to what Mason Smith is going to offer on those third downs, playing potentially 30 to 40% of the snaps, that I think he's going to surprise some people this year. And we're going to look back 2-3 years and say, that's a heck of a pick from Trent Baalke there in the fourth round.
Jaguar fans are loving what you're saying. Trent Baalke also said, look, we need to get bigger, stronger, more physical on the line of scrimmage. Well, they did that on the D-line. You think about Eric Armstead, you think about Travis Gibson, Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson. On the offensive line, Mitch Morse, they re-sign Ezra Cleveland. And they go bring in Javon Foster out of Missouri in round four. And, Ryan, I got to tell you, based on everything I saw, I think getting him in round four may have been good value for the Jaguars. What was your thought?
Immense value. Javon Foster fundamentally as a run blocker in this class. Now, I know we get so obsessed with guys, they're athletes at the position and pass pro, but Javon, also another guy that was down there at the Senior Bowl, just physical at the left tackle spot. I mean, he had a collision with Jalik Hunt, who went to the Philadelphia Eagles down there in Mobile, that I put on my Twitter, that it just sounded like a darn train wreck. Just not a guy that's going to be afraid to pop pads and get after people in the run game. So, again, another guy in the fourth round that has that developmental trait type of bucket, to where I do want to see some more improvement in his lower half, the fluidity. But that's all coaching and development, I think, and Javon's game is going to come along. But I think he's someone absolutely – that could start for you in a pinch at tackle. And I potentially would even like to see him bump into guard just because of his ability to get vertical and use his hands, establish leverage, and really push people to the dirt in the run game. Again, he's the physicality that Javon Foster plays with. I'm not sure many guys rival him in that area as a run blocker, specifically at the position in the class.
If it were you, left tackle, right tackle, move him inside, what do you think the best way for him is in the future?
Yeah, I would slide him to the right side. I know that transition is easier said than done, but just that atypical mold of the right tackle in the run game, I like for Javon. And then if you have to, if he has to be that sixth offensive lineman, I think that's a position as well that goes a little underrated, where he could be one snap away, to where he could really be that Kai Nseki type of player, to where he is that swing tackle, or he could be that swing guard. But the best immediate path to success for me could be bumping Javon to the right side or right inside a guard.
Couple of more for Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report. All right, Ryan, they did not go corner in round one. Were you surprised with Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold there at 17? They traded back, and then they could have taken Arnold again. They chose not to. Instead, Jerrion Jones in round three and De'Andre Prince of Ole Miss in round five. What did you make of the guys they drafted and the guys they passed up on at corner?
Yeah, I mean, Philly, right? They got Quinyon, they got Cooper DeJean. I mean, they obviously raised in the eyes of Darius Slay and James Bradbury, and also Nickel Avante Maddox, who they brought back this year up there in Philadelphia. But I love Jerrion Jones. I think I've talked to you before, Ryan, how much I love Jerrion from Florida State. Now, he lived at nickel, but if you talk to Jerrion, he'd say, well, I'm a corner at the end of the day. I'm a DB. I can play inside. I can play outside. He's above that six-foot threshold. He was excellent down at the Shrine Bowl, excellent length. He can run. He can play special teams. I thought he was someone that slipped a little bit on boards. I thought he was someone that's going to go late second round. So immense value for him as well. And then you grab De'Andre Prince, that also had a good pre-draft process from Ole Miss. I enjoyed watching his game as well. Another guy that's going to be able to play inside the contact window. He has the get up and go to remain hip to hip with some of those receivers that they're going to face in the AFC South. Now, he's not going to start over at Tyson Campbell or Jerrion Jones or Ronald Darby, but you can never have enough guys on the outside that can flat out understand how to cover and have the alignment versatility. And I think De'Andre Prince is going to offer that there as a guy in the fifth round.
Jerrion Jones, do you foresee him at nickel?
I do foresee him right away at nickel. Yes, I do.
And that's interesting because, again, the thought is Darnell Savage, but I guess you never have too much depth there. There's a lot of valuable veteran corners, like a Marshawn Lattimore is available, a Xavien Howard is available. You got to wonder if the Jaguars go that route or if they're okay with Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage, and some youngsters behind them.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's something even that goes underrated, right, in this process, to where we look at the free agency classes that teams have. You look at the draft classes and the guys that they bring in their draft hall, and they say, well, everything is done. Well, teams are going to make cuts, and training camp's going to happen. Injuries are going to happen. People are going to make moves. As we sit here today, is Brandon Ayuk going to be a Niner at the end of the day? Is Deebo Samuel? We don't know yet. So when I look at this class, I look at the corners specifically in Jacksonville, to where if I'm Trent Baalke, I'm not starting Ronald Darby on the outside. I just cannot feel comfortable with doing that right now. I think he's a veteran type of player, but I cannot feel comfortable in doing that. And then we talked about Jerrion Jones, to where if he lives at nickel, you do have that opening. So if I'm Jacksonville, I'm Trent Baalke, I'm kicking the tires, absolutely, on veterans like Xavien Howard, as far as the ball skills that you're going to get, veteran leadership, and, of course, Marshawn Lattimore, who had a hell of a career down there in New Orleans.
Stephon Gilmore is available as well. If it were you, who would you bring in, Lattimore, Howard, or Gilmore?
Of those three, I would take Stephon Gilmore. I think what he was able to do, obviously, not just in New England as a former Defensive Player of the Year, what he did, of course, in Dallas, getting Trayvon Diggs up to speed, getting guys like Deron Bland as that veteran type of addition back there. He's got tons of snaps on his legs, but he's someone, I think, coming right away. You know what you're going to get, learn the defense quickly, and play right away at multiple levels. So I would prioritize Stephon Gilmore if I'm Trent Baalke.
Final moments with Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report. Ryan, of the other guys that they took, whether it's Keelan Robinson, the returner, Cameron Little, who was one of the best interviews that the Jaguar rookie class had. You want to talk about confidence in that young man, the kicker from Arkansas. And then Miles Cole out of Texas Tech. You want to talk about a Trent Baalke guy. Miles Cole has all the dimensions Baalke loves. Any of those three guys stand out to you?
Yeah, look, Cam Little, Ryan, heading into the process, he actually had some top 120 buzz from teams. So to get him late on day three, I love it. Getting guys to come in the building and flat out compete at the position. He's one of the premier kickers in this entire 2024 NFL draft. I mean, I know special teams guys, they go a little overlooked to where punters and kickers, and they just kind of hang out at practice and do their thing. But at the end of the day, special teams, they're just so darn important. I mean, we saw the Bears take Torrey Taylor from Iowa in the fourth round, the highest punter we've had drafted in over 12 years. So I love that addition, Cam Little, late on day three. You mentioned Miles Cole, long, physical. He has a long way to go for me before I ever play him consistently along the defensive line. If you look at him fundamentally, he looks a lot like Tyree Wilson coming out of Texas Tech last year, the top 10 pick that went to Las Vegas. So he looks the part. He's just got to learn and coach and develop in his game to play the part in the future. But I do like overall, Ryan, when I look at this thing from the 10,000-foot view for the Jaguars Hall, I really do like this class from Trent Baalke.
Ryan, as we say goodbye, look, Calvin Ridley was probably the attention grabber nationally leaving for division rival Tennessee. And maybe I have my Jaguar blinders on here, but I got to tell you, man, from January 7th when the season ended in Nashville – to where they are now. When you think about the free agents, this draft class, to me, there's no question that this offseason has been a success for the Jaguars. What's your thought there?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that Trent Baalke went haywire and said, we got to make all these different additions. And of course, you see Mitch Morse along the interior, and you add players like a Brian Thomas and like a Javon Foster, and you bring in a Mason Smith to compete with the Eric Armsteads of the world. He also sat there and said, look, I also need some more from picks I've had in the past. Specifically, I look at a guy like Brenton Strange. What is his going to be projection in 2024, right? And then you look on defense to where there's veterans, right? You look at Devin Lloyd. Now, he's a veteran. Ola Kuhn, Antonio Johnson, we talked about him last year as an immense value addition in the fifth round. So I agree with you. I thought they got better this year. I think it's obviously somebody to where I'm not going to sit here and say the Houston Texans are the favorites in the AFC South. It was 1 year, and this is going to be a big prove-it year for the Houston Texans because I don't expect them to have that New York Giants type of regression to where you make the playoffs and then you completely fall off the face of the earth. But the Jaguars are obviously going to be expected to not just compete in the AFC South this year, but when we sit here in January, and if they won the AFC South crown, no one would be shocked. So I'm right there with you. I think they absolutely improved this year. Now it's just about winning games nose-to-nose on Sundays instead of looking at spreadsheets and saying, hey, they look good at this position, they look good at this position, got to line up and compete every single week.
Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report. Ryan, I know you had a very busy weekend. Thank you for joining us to recap the draft. I can't believe this, but the next time you and I talk, we will be approaching training camp. Now with the draft and free agency in the rearview mirror, the offseason has absolutely flown by. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Yep, can't wait for it. Thanks as always, Ryan.
And thank you to Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report for joining us tonight here on Hacker After Dark, as I think we did a good job recapping the Jaguar draft class. Last week, 9 new players in total. It's been interesting after the draft and those 9 new guys. Of course, the big news of the week, the Jaguars releasing wide receiver Zay Jones and kicker Joey Sly. So it's been a very active week news-wise for the Jaguars, and that'll continue for the rest of this month. We have rookie minicamp next week. Obviously, all the rookies come in, and reportedly veteran wide receiver Jarvis Landry will be here for a workout as well. And then OTAs, on-the-field activities for the Jaguars, will begin, I believe, on May the 20th. So we're 2 weeks away from OTAs getting fired up here in the city of Jacksonville. Well, that'll just about do it for what has been a very busy Friday night and really a very busy week here on Hacker After Dark. We certainly appreciate you guys for hanging out with us here all week long. We have a ton of people to thank tonight. Again, my buddy Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report for stopping by. Thank you to JP Acosta of SB Nation. Really enjoyed that conversation talking Jaguars with JP this evening. John Shipley of Jaguar Report. Always enjoy talking with John. And back in hour number one, former Jaguar tight end Clay Harbor joined us to not only talk about the draft, but really recap the entire offseason for the Jaguars, which in large part, again, is in the rearview mirror, right? Free agency is done for the most part. The draft is done. As we mentioned, OTA is about 2 weeks away. So the Jaguars may add a veteran or two. I think they certainly need to do that. But by and large, who they have now is who they're going to take with them into the 2024 campaign. Now, we will be back on Monday, and it's a little different next week. Blue is on vacation, so we will be 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock next week, Monday through Friday, 6 to 8. Actually, J.J. LaSilva will be with me next week, 6 to 8 here on Hacker After Dark, so we do hope that you join us then. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the Hacker Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Friday evening with us and your entire week with us here on Hacker After Dark. And we can't possibly tell you enough how much we certainly appreciate it. So for all of us here on HAD, have a fantastic remainder of your Friday evening and an absolutely terrific weekend. And we will do it all over again Monday night here on Hacker After Dark, beginning at 6 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.